independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
A Chinese government official is the latest to advise the U.S. to proceed with caution in North Korea. China's foreign minister said tensions between the U.S. and North Korea must be stopped before it reaches, quote, an irreversible and unmanageable stage. A U.S. Navy strike group is positioning in range at the Korean Peninsula after U.S. military strikes in Syria and Afghanistan. Bill Zimpfer, NBC News Radio.
Crazy! Wild, wacky world that we live in. Good Friday to you. It is the Chad Benson Show in studio, as every Friday. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. Jim!
Chad?
He's a dwarf, but he's annoying. But I have been telling people what nobody else is telling them. A nuclear weapon gives you a seat at the big table, and it's tough to pry those little itty-bitty hands away from said nuclear weapon.
Yeah, by the way, if you're his size and you have a nuclear weapon, you are not a dwarf. You're just a crazy guy with a nuclear weapon who's height challenged. But yes, but it was funny, you know, that tape that we played that started the hour off with, we could in theory have played that 15 years ago, and that could be the same tape, because this is something that's been going on for three decades at least with varied incantations of that family. And the threats of nuclear weapons or the threats of missiles going into Japan. I think the Chinese tolerance over those 30 years has changed dramatically. But same problem, same country. The people have just gotten poorer and probably thinner, unfortunately, because they don't get to feed them very much up there. And the question is, when you've got nothing to lose, how do you really lose?
Yeah. I mean, that is a big question. He's fine. His chosen people are fine. And there are those chosen people with him. Meaning, you know, if you live in Pyongyang, chances are you're brainwashed, but you're not the outside world of non-living in Pyongyang and starving to death. But let's be real. There's no diplomacy from the outside world that's going to work. There's one nation that may have the strength to, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, reason with him, and it isn't us. It's China.
No, correct. And again, we talked about this last week.
It's China.
It is China, and it is their duty, if they want to be a regional power, it's their duty to clean up the messes in their own backyard, and this guy is a massive mess that definitely needs quite a bit of Windex to clean up, and they need to make sure that he's held in line, or he needs to make sure that he gets separated from his nuclear weapon, and I'm not sure how they're going to do that. But he does what goods they are able to obtain. Majority of them are obtained through China. So they have that ability. I mean, you know, he obviously leads a good life and probably has the flowing plasma screens and the 40 or the 80-inch LCD screens in his place, unlike the rest of the people that are eating wallpaper paste to survive. But that stuff's got to come through, more than likely, China. So the Chinese do hold that ability with him. But also remember, you know, he is only in power because of the will of his generals. If the generals all get together and decide, you know what, this guy has really gone too far off of the crazy reservation list, they may decide at some point that this guy needs to come down, and they respect the grandfather and the father. You know, this guy's just gone too far out there. And for the safety of the North Korean people, maybe we need to have a putsch here or something.
You know, and you talk about Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research here, as he is every Friday. You talk about that. And I want everybody to know, as evil and as crazy and as lunatic he is, there are some within the regime where backdoor channels are always open to keep him from doing what they're doing. Which is, and doing potentially what could be done, which is pushing a button that would start World War III. I don't think we'll ever get there because there are backdoor channels that we don't know about. And I think after Trump reversed he pivoted after Xi Jinping was here. And he did that because I have a feeling they made such headway of what is going to take place moving forward with this guy that he's willing to give in. This is the world of negotiation that we talked about.
Well, it's funny because, yeah, exactly. It's interesting because, and I don't remember who came up with this. I remember it was under Bush that one of the first times I heard this comment about is that you want a little bit of crazy in your leaders because you want to keep everybody kind of off guard. The guy in Korea has got he's got crazy in space.
His crazy bucket is full.
Yeah, his crazy bucket is overflowing. But the thing is, a lot of the people, you know, all the Americans even that are anti-Trump and are never Trumpers, they're concerned because Trump is crazy. Well, that crazy can also play back into North Korea. And with, look, you know, the guy's got to think, hey, maybe this Trump guy is crazy enough. He'll throw nukes at me.
Yeah.
You know, you would, George Bush wouldn't have done that. Bill Clinton wouldn't have done that.
No.
Didn't. Even Barack Obama wouldn't have thrown a nuke at him. But Trump, yeah, that guy's crazy. He might actually do it. So I got to be careful here because I may actually disappear one day.
He's got that look. You know, and if you know the story of the OK Corral, one of the things that said that tipped it off is at one time, Doc Holliday looked over and he winked. And that kind of set everybody off. And that's the kind of thing that Trump has this, you know what, I got all these buttons and I don't know what they do. So, but I think that's the perception he wants everybody to have. It's not the reality.
No, I don't think it is. You know, it's like, hey, Ivanka's taking my Twitter account away from me. Can I just go push buttons instead?
Yeah.
You know, I'm bored. It's 4 o'clock on Sunday morning or Saturday morning. What do? I don't got a Twitter. Hey, let's go see if I can make North Korea glow in the dark.
It is crazy. Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. Ping was here, and I think trade was the big talk, and I think everything around that trade was surrounded about, look, we're going to cut you some great deals. And a lot of people this week have been saying, wait a minute here. He didn't want to get involved in Syria. Then he did. He didn't want to do this. Now he's did. Now he's reversing on you know, currency manipulation, and he's reversing on trade with China. People don't get it anymore, what it is to actually negotiate. And I think it's the biggest shocker for political people to see somebody who's willing to pivot because they just haven't seen it in so long.
Right. And also remember with Trump, it's the art of the deal. It's the negotiation. So maybe he was just simply posturing in all of those comments about his initial negotiating posture.
Yeah.
This is where we're going to start from, folks. Okay. Now where we wind up is going to be a deal that I like and I think is for America and is going to make America great again, regardless of it's China, North Korea, Syria, or insert rogue problem here or currency manipulator there. And that's kind of what it is with Trump. This is a guy that understands business like no other president we have had. The guy, I mean, people want to say that he's stupid, he's crazy, he's nuts, he's an idiot. Well, if you're that smart, folks, do you have $3 or $4 billion in the bank or have a net worth? No, you don't. So the guy's done something right over the years. Don't know the reasons why, but the guy's done something to get $3 or $4 billion in his pocket. And he hasn't done like Vladimir Putin has done it by stealing it or by being an oligarch. So there's a little bit different there.
Yeah.
Trump's had to do it in a competitive marketplace and not run afoul of the law, not be the law. So it's a little bit different there with old Vlad the Impaler. But Trump understands business, understands currency. You're talking earlier about currency manipulation. I think you traded currencies, I think, in your
previous I traded currencies. And as I try to explain to people, currency manipulation, every nation does it. Every nation in the world does it. We like to keep our currency down. Why? Because we want investors to come here. We want not only that, we want to be attractive to outside money and outside people that are coming to buy houses, to come here on vacation, to do so much. Some people want stronger. Some people want weaker. It goes up. It goes down. We repatriate the funds, meaning we'll go in there, we'll sell the hell out of our dollar, and we'll buy it. It's happened for years, and it is the market that is most manipulated, but it is the market that's the most liquid, and it's easy yet tough to do what they do, and China does it, but so do we and everybody else.
Correct, and the reason I was going there was, you know how George Soros became a billionaire.
Soros is the greatest of all. Let's just put it this way, people. The Alchemy of Finance is an amazing book. I don't agree with anything Soros, but as a person, as a trader, as somebody who was in the business for a while, I admire him for what he did. He was so powerful that he broke the Bank of England, and at one time, France, I think it was Mitterrand at the time, begged him not to short the franc because it would have destroyed his nation. That's the power that this guy had. And so everybody plays in the currency market, every country. It's easy manipulation, but there's a reason for it.
Yeah. And so it's for those that are in the know, understand it, and it's out there. For those that don't, It affects why your prices go up 20% in a month or something if you're looking at imported goods that are coming in, or why the price may fall something, why certain companies may not meet their earnings because of foreign currency translation issues. But it certainly goes on a lot, and Trump understands it a lot better than a lot of the other presidents who've had to have this explained to them through their economic advisors and through their treasury secretaries. So Trump's going to be on a better position to deal with it and try to keep the other countries in line. And China's the main main problem with it right now. In the 80s and 90s, the Japanese were the ones manipulating their currency.
They used to keep me up at night because I'd be long the yen and I wouldn't know what the hell they were going to do. You would literally wake up in the middle of the night and you would find out that they had gone and shorted the hell out of their currency or strengthened it. That was one of the few times I would say, if there was one marketplace that kept me crazy awake all the night, it was the yen and the Japanese, because they had literally a lost decade plus of struggles financially, and the yen is where they played a game, and it just, oh, God, it was crazy. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, CHADBENSON, chat at ChadBensonShow.com. Always text the program, 323-538-2423. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is with us. You can check him out at Righty Jim. He's going to keep it right here with us. We got more straight ahead. I want to talk about that flip-flopping, as everybody's saying about Trump. I also want to talk about what a great choice, I think, in the end, Rex Tillerson's going to be that nobody saw coming. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Serving up talk radio medium rare and dripping with irony. It's Chad Benson.
Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is with us as we talk politics and all craziness on a Friday. Jim, you've got a lot of people out there. There's a certain cult that goes with people who love Trump. And a lot of people don't understand, you know, they love it when he says things and they think this is great and that he is going to do exactly that. But the fact is, Trump, and I've said it all week, and some people are just like, you don't get it. I'm like, no, you guys aren't understanding. This guy is not an ideologue. This guy is a deal maker, and he wants to get stuff done, and getting stuff done is the most important thing to him. And I think for a lot of people out there, they're going to be disappointed. And a lot of people out there who are worried about Trump, I think, are going to be surprised at some of the stuff he does.
Absolutely. He's not left. He's not right. He's Trump. And that's pretty much, as I said earlier on, there are going to be weeks when you're a Trump supporter and you love him. And the next week you may want to throw your shoe at the television set because he's irritated you because he's done something that's counter to your beliefs and what you thought Trump was about. So don't get tied into anything because, like you said, he's not an ideologue. And, you know, I've got a 92-year-old mother who is backing Trump, who's backed him from the first day and said when he came down that escalator he was going to be president. And I said, no, Mom, he's not going to be. And unfortunately, I sit here and commentate, and she was correct on that, but so be it. And, you know, there are times when she goes, well, what do you think about Trump now? Because, you know, she's kind of curious if she's should still be following what he does, and I talked to her about it. But it's just like you said, it is a cult. It is people who, you know, Trump's going to make America great again, and you could just get a 20,000-seat audience to roar in applause, and that's what he does. He throws out their platitudes. Never really had a lot of deep process or a lot of deep project or detail in his projects. I kept saying, I want to see the detail. Trump never really was about detail in what the stuff he's talking about. Now that he's president, he's got to come down with that detail, and so far, though, you know, it's been pretty interesting.
You know, we talked a bit about it earlier, and the detail – minus Bannon and the slip-ups of our good friend Spicy, which are hilarious always. Minus those two. And the Bannon thing has been quiet. It's been mostly a D.C. in the Beltway kind of thing, as it has. And Spicy, you can't blame that on Trump. That's Spicy on itself. But inside, the cabinet, the administration, the people around it are coming together. They're finding their feet. You're not hearing any more about leaks. You're not hearing any more about any of this crazy stuff coming out, the infighting. What you're hearing about is nothing, which means that they've got their feet and they're moving in the right direction.
Well, could very well be. Remember this, you know, he had at I think the 30 and the 50-day mark, fewer people in place than any other president had in like 50 or 100 years. So it has taken them a lot longer to get all of their pieces in place. So this has been kind of a momentum-building process for Trump. And like you said, they finally got the momentum going. They finally got their people in place, and they're finally getting the rest of them in place. And it'll still take another couple months to get everybody in place. And you'll have people that'll come and go just because people come and go. It's a tough business. You're working 7/24. If you got a family and a wife, that gets to be a little tough after 3 and 6 months if you've really understood what you've bought in for. This isn't a corporate life like Rex Tillerson had, where basically he would work, you know, 6 to 6 and be gone a couple of weeks, you know, a month on a corporate jet. It's a little bit different than that for him and for all of these other people. So if they're not used to it, it's going to be a little bit different life. And for some people, they may decide after 3 months they may want to jump off. You may get some people coming in and out.
Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. I want to talk about Tillerson. We're going to save it to after break because I'm going to keep you a little bit longer here. But spicy, I said, of all the jobs to have there, right, of all of the jobs that you're going to have in the White House, that is probably the most unforgiving. It is probably the most – it is the toughest singularly day-to-day job because some people will have off days where they really don't have a lot to do. They'll have some meetings. It's under the radar. He is in front of everybody, and on top of that, he is, you know, he's hilarious. I mean, in not a horrible way. He's not a horrible human being. He's not an idiot, but he is hilarious.
Well, he's certainly better than the than Mike on Veep that plays the plays that
hilarious
role.
Yes.
But yes, though, Spicer is quite entertaining. But you're right. It's a thankless job that all you can do, your most perfect day would be no screw-ups. So basically, all you have to do is be completely and utterly perfect. There is no 110%.
No.
It is basically, I'm either 100% or I am zero. That's basically what it is. It's basically kind of like being an air traffic controller with more or less people's lives at risk, one way or the other.
His name is Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. He's going to stick through here because I do want to talk to him about Rex Tillerson. And there's so much stuff to get to. The Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter, at Righty Jim is his Twitter. Jim, when you were coming in here today, we got about 30 seconds. When you were coming in here today, how was the traffic? Because Coachella is in full effect.
Not too bad up in this end of the valley.
All right. So craziness. Lots of them at the airport. A lot of man buns. Seen a few of them. I don't think men should be that thin. I just have to say that. Maybe I'm weird. Maybe I'd like to be that thin, but I don't know if men should be as thin. You shouldn't be thinner than the girl that you're with. All right? I'm just, if she can fit in one of your pant legs, probably not a good thing. I'm throwing that out there is what I'm trying to say. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is with us. We have more straight ahead. It's the Chad Benson Show.
The Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Happy Good Friday. It's the goodest Friday of the week. Chad Benson Show. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is joining us here. All right. Tillerson met this week, and when he went to Moscow, it was, hey, you know what, I meet with Lavrov or whatever, and we're going to hang out, and we're going to talk about stuff. I'm not meeting with Putster. Even though Putster and I have a relationship, and lo and behold, they did meet.
Mm-hmm.
Trump never met Tillerson before this, didn't know who the guy really was, knew of him because you're a powerful individual, you know of each other, but never met the guy. And out of nowhere, he thinks this is the guy for the job. Looking at the relationship that Tillerson has with Russia, unlike Manafort and a lot of these other guys, Flynn, who I think were in it for some money and for themselves, this guy's got all the money he's ever needed. He's doing this not because he wants to, because his wife basically told him when the president calls, you've got to take that call and you got to take that job. This could be amazing if he's able to smooth over a lot of what's going on here with Russia.
Well, just like Trump, he's going to come at it from a slightly different angle. He's going to come at it from a business perspective because he had dealt with Putin before. I think Tillerson and Exxon had negotiated deals in 23 different countries. And I'm guaranteeing you that's probably more countries than Hillary Clinton had negotiated deals in before she came into the office of Secretary of State, and probably more than John Kerry had. So
yeah.
While they're different types of deals, they're not diplomatic processes dealing with famines, crises, short guys with nuclear weapons.
And they never get actually done to the thing. With a lot of politics, not everything got done. I mean, we hit the reset button, right?
It's a never-ending process.
Yeah.
the you know, the fact that you're negotiating business deals with these people gives you, you know, gives them a leg up. They know who they are. They know who they've dealt with. They know the deputies. They know the intricacies of the people, what they like, what they don't like, what the peculiarities are. So it kind of, you know, puts you a little bit of a, of, rather than reading a briefing book on the person, it's, oh, yeah, I know him. Out of him, and we negotiated a $4 billion oil shale agreement, or a, you know, $2 billion refinery deal. So they're used, you know, used to doing it. As long as you can, you translate that into a diplomatic process for dealing with softer issues, like you said, that don't really have necessarily firm boundaries on them or wins or losses tied to them, that are kind of ongoing processes, like a crazy guy in North Korea where this has been a family business of crazy for about 50 years now. It's a little different. Tillerson, though, may very well be the man that that could pull that off.
If he does that, the one thing that he's going to end up having to pull off is getting Russia to realize that what we have here in Assad is a guy that needs to go, whether he's your pal or not. You're already ensconced there. You're not going anywhere. You guys have what you want, the port. He is. You can get you're done with him. I think he can do that, but, you know, a lot of people are thinking, well, you know, we got to get him out of Damascus. Where's he going to go? He's a war criminal. In this day and age, can we do another Idi Amin? Can we do another Pol Pot where he dies under house arrest, living in a giant home?
It is not inconceivable that that could very well be the way it is. He grew up in the area near where the Russian base is and where the Russian port is, up in the northwest area of Syria, living in a quasi Alawite safe area. He could very well wind up on a plane to Tehran and wind up living his days out in a nice house on the Caspian Sea, possibly too. Or he could wind up a Ceausescu bloody corpse thrown over and, you know, and hung in a town square in Damascus too. All depends who gets to him first, and that's the issue. Being that he's, you know, I don't see a large Hague trial in his future, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The man should pay for what he's done, but it's probably unlikely, and the Russians probably would not want to, you know, let it be known that we will turn over our supporters that quickly to be that badly dealt with if you are a war criminal and you are backing with Vladimir.
You know, it's you know, understand, there was 3,000 people that we could have tried, you know, at Nuremberg, and we chose 22 because there was only 22 seats that they could put in there. So they got the biggest and the ones that were going to make the noise. It's been a long time since we've had that. And it's always a good reminder to the world that there is real law in the world, that there really are people of good morals, that there really are ways that things should and shouldn't be done right. And I mean, he should be brought to trial. I think the last one we had a semi-half-ass trial was that Milovic.
Yeah.
Yeah?
That would have been my personal guess. That would have been the last one of these guys that actually got to trial. Fortunately, some of the times their own people decide to have their own trials, and generally they're short and swift and painful. So that's fine by me, with either with Ceausescu or with some of the other, you know, with Gaddafi, and yeah, we got to, you know, take.
He had a trial right by that giant, huge pipe right there.
Yeah, before they beat the stuff out of him and hung him with it, or with Saddam, who got to meet his maker in the hole of the back of a house outside of, in Iraq. So it all depends. I would think people would like to see a trial, but I don't think Vladimir would ever let that happen, because Vladimir knows that could very well be him at one day on the other end of that if something goes really, really south in Russia. So I think he sees his own future there and does not want to let that happen.
Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research, as we move forward here, they're all on vacation now out there in D.C. They're enjoying their time off, but we're approaching summer. The 100 days, we seem to have settled down. The craziness, the wackiness has all seemed to kind of, now it's business, and, you know, there's not going to be an impeachment. None of this crazy stuff's going to happen. This guy's here. What do the Republicans do now? Because 2018 swiftly approaching, these guys and gals are going to be out there raising money sooner rather than later, and they're going to go back to their constituents like last night, was it Flake did, and he just got absolutely filleted. Tax reform, regulations, and Obamacare, you guys have jacked the pooch. And guess what? TikTok, TikTok, TikTok.
You sure there's not going to be impeachment? I think Maxine Waters is...
She's nuts, and it's not going to happen because, as I was told, she has a bad wig.
Ouch. I can neither confirm or deny any of those allegations.
Well, that's what the sexual harasser Bill O'Reilly allegedly said,
Oh, well, if Bill says it, you know it's got to be true. But no, Bill, seriously, you're right. I mean, you're a congressman. You need $10,000 a week in campaign fundraising to get yourself reelected. And that clock is beginning to tick. In fact, in the congressional district where I do my show down in Laguna, we already have at least one candidate signed up to run against the incumbent. And there's more on the way. So it's beginning to move back into, you know, you think that the season's end very, that there's a very short offseason now for baseball. I think this is a shorter offseason for politics. And we're basically beginning to wind that back up again for 2018. We'll be holding, you know, there'll be primaries going off within 12 months, and we'll have a general election within 15, 16 months. So we're going to be back into it. What are they going to do in Washington when they come back? Well, I believe we're running out of money. We've got a debt limit to increase. That's going to have to be done because the state, the government's going to be out of money again. I don't know if Ted Cruz is going to want to shut it down again with Republican Congress now. They may be able to do that, but this Congress is a little bit different from that aspect. There's still got a lot of people that are interested in financial reforms and balancing the budget, but that still doesn't seem to be the top priority they've got. And some of the regulation you've talked about, tax reform is definitely one of them. We are looking at, again, almost $1 trillion offshore that can be repatriated and can certainly be pumped back into the economy if you want to make America great again, bringing, say, $250 billion or $150 billion, depending upon the tax rate that you want to repatriate those dollars at 15 or 25%. That'd be a nice boost for the economy to bring that back in and get that floating back through the economy and take it out of the banks in the Isle of Man or wherever it is that they're sitting right now.
You know, it's Obamacare came in, and that was the death knell for the Democrats. I mean, you look at it. And we're not just talking about the presidency. He continued to be the president. He won re-election again. But it was so many of the little seats up to the state seats, up to the Congress and the senators that lost their. Is it time that we're going to see the flip now? Because I just have a sense that we're going to see a bit of a shift away from the Republicans here. Because as we like to do in this country, we love to give you power. Then we get scared and we take a little bit of it away from it.
Depends on what they actually do with it between now and Election Day. They are going to need to actually show something. If they're going to become another know-nothing or do-nothing Congress, that could be painful. But also, a lot of these seats have changed their demographics through gerrymandering with the various states. And a lot of these seats are very, very hard to get rid of people in. There's probably only about 25 or 30 real toss-up seats, provided there is not some sort of a major faux pas or a very solid organized effort within of the various party to take that seat away. On the Senate side, you're talking about a significant number of people who had coattails that were followed in on the 2012 presidential election. Senate sits every or comes up for election every 6 years. 2018 will be a large number of Democratic senators that came in under the Obama presidential wave of 2012. So the Democrats will be defending a lot more seats this time. So it's going to be very difficult for them to hold those seats because I think six or seven of those are in states that that Trump won. So it's going to be very hard for the Democrats to hold their seats, let alone pick up seats. So for 2018, highly unlikely we'll see a substantial change, barring some sort of a public pressure or a public outcry change for Democrats to come in and the Republicans to go out of Congress. 2020 could see something like that, but definitely not 2018 with the way that the House is organized and the number of Senate races out there.
Paul Ryan keep his job?
Depends what he does between now and next 18 months.
I mean, does he keep his job even as speaker?
Well, no, yeah, that's what I mean. Depends what he does, what he gets through, and whether Trump can build enough power with groups that basically want to remove Paul Ryan, or if Trump decides that Ryan must go. I mean, as he gets more and more wins, more and more congressmen will want to be taking their picture next to Trump come election season, and more people will basically listen to Trump when they say, look, I think you'd be a better speaker. You're my guy. Paul Ryan's got to go.
It'll be very interesting over the next year and a half or so as they move forward. And can they do anything through summer? Because I don't know if they're going to get anything done. His name is Jim Kennedy. He's from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. You can follow him at Righty Jim. Hey, a lot of people out there, they're worried. They're scared. They're trying to protect their home. And they're like, I can't protect my home the way I want to. I know I'm going to get in a little. And they go and they get this huge alarm system. And they're like, wait a minute here. I don't even understand. These people are in my house. They're putting like a computer on my wall. It's confusing. It's crazy. What? Look at the contract. I don't want that. I don't want that. That's a huge I'm locked in. Are you kidding me? There's a simpler way, a better way. Simple Safe Home Security. Let me tell you what you do. First and foremost, let me tell you how simple it is. You go onto the old internet here. Few clicks, boom, it's on its way. A few days later, it's at your door. Within an hour, you're surrounded with 24/7 professional protection. Doesn't get any simpler than that. Amazing cameras, the whole nine yards. Here's the best part with Simply Safe. No fees, no contracts, no hassles. Smarter, better home security. Go to simplysafe.com/Benson now to get my special 10% discount. But hurry, this discount won't last long. That's simplysafe.com/Benson for 10% off your Simply Safe home security system. simplysafe.com/Benson. We'll wrap it up straight ahead. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Giving the First Amendment a run for its money. This is the Chad Benson Show.
What we do, kids, that's what we do. You text the program, 323-538-2423. Several text messages. People worry. Stop worrying. Stop worrying. Nothing's going to happen. It's all rhetoric. Everything is, this is the beauty of it. It's you scream and you yell. It's rhetoric. That's it. Nothing else. Nothing else. Nobody's going to die. You're not going to wake up on Easter Sunday and find out that the world's in World War III. Now, in saying that, you may wake up tomorrow or Easter Sunday and find out that they tested a nuclear weapon, but that's it. That's it. We have a poll up. I've got to tell you about that. Get doing so many other things, man, sometimes. Can you be considered racist by telling someone you're late? According to a new study from Clemson, it is racist by telling people that. This new study that they did, they spent $30,000 basically on this study. And what they did is they ran hypothetical situations. And the hypothetical situation is everybody was going to be downstairs at breakfast for 9 o'clock. Some people got there 15 minutes early. Other people got there 15 minutes late. And the people that were there 15 minutes early, what they've surmised is you're not allowed to ask somebody why you're 15 minutes late. Because culturally, there may be differences. Here's my thing. What if you're a cracker-ass cracker? Culturally, he lives across the street from me. He was born and raised there. There's no culture different in his house. What? And the thing that drove me crazy about this is it's always about other people's cultures. That sounds fine if I'm in another person's culture, but you're in my culture. In your house, if you want to have your culture, great. We could celebrate your culture. That's no big deal. But my culture is this. Me showing up at 9 o'clock, I feel like I'm late if I'm supposed to be there. I always try to be there early. Because to me, that is a respect thing. You're showing people respect. If you don't want to show me respect, show up late. What you're saying to me is, I don't value your time. Well, in my culture, that's great. This is the culture that you live in now. If you like your culture so much, then why are you here in my culture? We can celebrate your culture. Your culture is fantastic. It's great. In my culture, and I'm sick and tired of always trying to change our ways to fit around everybody else's. You've come here for whatever reason. Opportunity, you married somebody, whatever it is. You've chosen to come here. So you should respect that culture. I've said it on numerous occasions. When I go to Europe, when I live there, I respected the culture. I threw myself into the culture. I wasn't an American. I was an Englishman. Yes, I was an American in my heart. Yes, I was an American in you know, when I was sitting there watching the TV I liked or eating and missing my food and stuff like that. But I respected their culture. I loved their culture. I felt like I was a part of their culture. And guess what? I never had any problems. Not saying you can't celebrate, but if you, how dare you ask somebody, oh, you can't be here at, you know, you're supposed to be here at 2:30 and it's 2:45 or it's 3 o'clock. Well, you know, in my culture, sorry, class starts at 3. Job interview was at 3. Stuff happens. I get that. I have friends here who are teachers, and they'll tell me other cultures, they don't care about your time. Student teacher, parent teacher conference, supposed to be at noon, supposed to be at 1 on a Tuesday. You show up Thursday at 4 o'clock. Well, in my culture, sorry, you're in our culture. Call it racist, call it whatever you want to call it. But this is the culture you live in. Do that a few times at your work and say, I'm sorry I'm late, but in my culture, it's good. Guess what happens after that? In your culture, are you as unemployed as you are now? Just want to point that out. It's all a fun show, as always. Got through it. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show. Twitter, C-H-A-D-B-E-N-S-O-N, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. You can always text the program, 323-538-2423. And you can check us out across all mediums at Chad Benson Show. Have a safe, amazing Easter for my man Phil, for my man Anthony. Katie, have a good time. Shout out to you. Night-night, Jack.
This is the Chad Benson Show.